Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The winner of the play-in game between Deadpool and Coco.
they both have to do with death.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Yep.
And for Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Hey, I'm excited today.
Yeah?
Ooh, it's a big day.
Why? Why? Why would you be excited?
And this is a project that's been simmering in my brain for, I don't know, a few weeks.
You've done a lot of work on this, actually, yeah, to be fair.
Have. Indeed, you have. We will be doing our Best of the Decade bracket starting today, which will, you know, it'll last for a while, too.
Probably.
You will get your money's worth out of this.
Indeed. You can send all your hate mail to Barrett Scher.
That's right.
Here's his address.
The Best of the Decade.
Best of the Decade.
This is obviously the 2010s.
Let's give the big caveat here for all our new listeners who have never heard us do a bracket before. This is our bracket. Mm-hmm. This is not meant to represent everyone's bracket. This
right.
is Barrett, Chris, and Jeremy's bracket. There are movies that each of us have that we adore that we would wish were in this bracket, but because the other two either didn't see it or didn't love it as much, it's not there. We all have those movies. This bracket is composed of movies that we all think are great and worthy of at least inclusion in the discussion. Best of the Decade. If we did not include your favorite movie of the decade, that is not an insult. You can choose to be insulted by that, or you could just enjoy the ride.
Well, and I thought about this because I saw a lot of the movies that were they were suggested on Facebook, and a lot of stuff that had been named several times. I went out and watched a lot of these, and almost all of them are great. Hmm. Almost all of them could probably get into this bracket. Hmm. The problem is, How long does a movie have to sit with you before you're saying this is best of the decade?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And this is a problem that some 2019 movies might even have.
Right.
Even. But, you know, I just saw Hunt for the Wilder People, and I just saw Handmaiden, and I just saw Shoplifters. Mm. How am I going to stack this up against all these movies I've had a lot of time with?
Right. Yeah.
So, and it was even hard for me to go, I'm going to email you guys and say, you got to see this, because
right.
if you did and you liked it, then what? Are you going to be like, well, I think we should just remove four or five of the movies that we already have there?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just because of, you know, public consciousness, it doesn't mean that that impacts our decision on this bracket itself. Mm-hmm. This is us.
Yes.
Very well. So, said.
I'm probably giving away the ghost on a few of those movies because I named them by name. They're not on, unfortunately.
Well, it's all right.
It's just the way it goes. But this is our bracket. This is how we'll do it. And we will take the controversy.
And it's a good one, too.
Yeah. Let's go on to the first round in the North region. And if you are unfamiliar with how we do this, this is just like March Madness in the NCAAs here in the United States, college basketball, a 68-team field. And a 1 seed plays a 16 seed, a 2 seed plays a 15, and so on. And until they play each other, until there is a champion
and
by
that,
the end of it.
We'll probably be done about the time the NCAA tournament rolls around.
Yeah. these typically last 6 or 7 weeks a little bit longer. From now.
They do. So in the North region, our number 1 seed is Mad Max Fury Road. Going up against the winner of the play-in, quote-unquote play-in game, between Toy Story 3 and Sinister.
So very similar.
We have already lost all of our viewers with that one right there.
Did you see where Edgar Wright tweeted out that he happily voted for the third straight year, knowing cockily that he had seen every movie for that he was voting on. And then he said, but it's still sad that I can't vote for Mad Max Fury Road for every category, even though it came out 5 years ago.
So right now you have a Fury Road over Sinister being included into this thing.
That's right.
Like, I introduced it as a long, long, long shot into this, and it makes it into the play-in game. And I'm happy that it's here. It'll be interesting to see what our discussion is about Sinister and Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
I mean, Sinister has some genuinely disturbing moments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can disturb me in a couple of ways. One is just gore and violence, and you know, I think that disturbs a lot of people. But this is disturbing, like, that shot of the backyard and the thing. Like,
that's same for the thing.
That's the kind of thing you'll have nightmares on.
Yeah.
I know.
So we're not actually doing the matchups now.
No. Not right this way. He's going to read it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to read up all the matchups.
I did not understand that, and I apologize.
That's all right, dude.
No, I'm going to read up all the matchups, and then I guess if we have time, we can do one or two.
Sure, man.
But
no, yeah, I didn't realize. I misunderstood.
Yeah, I mean, normally when we go through these things, we sit here and talk about the movies over and over and over, and then by the time we're done, it's like, oh, we got a whole bracket we got to talk.
Yeah. No, I like this approach.
So the 2 seed in the North region, Hell or High Water?
Oh,
this is going to break your heart.
No.
Versus the 15 seed, Locke.
Oh, you fucking bastard. It was not intentional at all. Matter of fact, Locke is in there at the expense of one of my favorite movies of the decade, The Favorite.
Oh.
Because I couldn't. Even though Locke is such a simple movie and everything, I couldn't exclude it given the amount of love that we all three have.
Wow, you dick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 3 seed in the North region is Roma. Going up against the 14 seed, Under the Skin.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this will be an extremely interesting matchup.
It very much will be.
I may have to watch both of these movies again before I do this one.
What a weird one. That's
a strange ass fucking.
And that's why that's why I love these brackets. Is because nowhere else will you hear the debate on the merits between these two fucking films than on this podcast.
In the North region, the 4 seed, The Nice Guys, versus the 13 seed, Annihilation.
Oh, Jesus.
These are tough, man.
They really are.
These are ridiculously tough. The 5th seed, Nightcrawler, versus the 12 seed, The Revenant.
Yeah, and some of these movies are ones that I haven't thought about in years, like The Revenant, but when you go back and think about it, totally worthy of inclusion.
Already an unusual high amount of Tom Hardy in this bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Already 3 Tom Hardy movies.
Yeah.
What was
Locke,
the third?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
This one. I'll be curious to see if he
played
continues
Max,
dominant.
Barrett.
He's mad.
The 6 seed, La La Land, versus the 11 seed, John Wick 3.
Oh, Johnny Dubs.
Well, both movies have lots of kicking.
Mm-hmm,
This is the only John Wick movie from that franchise in this thing. Because, and I think we all agree that 3 is the best one.
The 3 of us agree.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of surprising people online that are supporting Dicer's position, which was that 1 had a little more like heart to it and it wasn't just a series of stunts, which is fine. 3 entertained the 3 of us more than the other 2.
I mean,
2.
It's okay to be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is once in a while.
Right. The 7 seed, Phantom Thread, versus the 10 seed, Gone Girl.
And some sausages.
Yeah. That's a tough one right there. Well, and then the 8 seed, Blind Spotting, versus the 9 seed, The Master.
Blind Spotting.
Two movies I absolutely adore.
What was the second one I got caught up on blind spotting?
The Master.
Oh, well, I know what I'm voting for. I didn't give it away. I'm voting for The Master. Also, a lot of P.T. Anderson now. That's 2 of him so far.
Going down to the East region, the number 1 seed is Inception.
More Tom Hardy.
Yeah, more Tom Hardy. Versus the 16 seed that the winner of the play-in game between Deadpool and Coco.
They both have to do with death.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
The number 2 seed, The Martian, Oh, this is going to hurt. The 2-15 so far.
I just saw
these
that.
Hurt. Oh, no. The 2-seed The Martian versus 15 Booksmart.
Oh, you had it out for me. You have it out for me?
I guess.
You have it out for
Subconsciously.
Me.
Subconsciously.
The 3-seed in the East region is The Raid 2.
Baby.
Barrendal. You know what? This is the first time I've even noticed that there was a... Was it? I thought it was. Was it the Redemption? Wasn't
that was
it?
The Redemption is the first one. The first one has like three different titles.
Okay,
it's either like Raid 2 or this.
I don't think I had ever seen Barrendal until this bracket.
Yeah.
So like that's why Redemption came to mind, even though I knew it was the first one.
I'm pretty sure in the original market it's just Raid 1 and Raid 2, and then when it got marketed to the U.S. they strapped on Redemption, and so the second one had to have, I don't know. Yeah, that was what I read. But
so the Raid 2 will be going up against the 14 seed Spider-Man Homecoming.
You do have it out for me.
I really realize that I do.
Yeah, yeah. There's going to be a horse head in your bed in the morning.
There is. The 4 seed in the East region is Whiplash.
Whiplash.
Going against the 13 seed, The Town.
Mm-hmm.
The 5 seed is Spotlight. Going against the 12 seed Lady Bird.
Oh, this shit's getting interesting.
Yeah, there's some really, really tough ones here. Number 6 seed in the East region is Black Panther. Going against the 11 seed, The Intouchables. Wow.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. The mind reels.
Yeah, no kidding.
My. Did you ever see the Cranston remake of The Intouchables?
The Upside? No.
Yeah, okay.
Then we have the 7 seed Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Versus the 10 seed Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh,
oh, that's going to hurt a little bit.
And finally, in the East region, we have the 8 seed Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse against the 9 seed 12 Years a Slave. So sickening. Good God.
Going down. Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God.
We move over to the South region. The number 1 seed is The Social Network.
Ooh.
Going up against the 16 seed, the winner of the play-in game, A Quiet Place, and the first Avengers.
That's a spicy matchup.
That
right
is
there.
A spicy
What's
matchup.
What's fun for me is, see, you're steeped in this. Every time you've sent us a version of this, if we've been honing it over the last several weeks, I've looked at the titles of films that are included, but I haven't paid any attention to, like, the matchups.
Yeah.
And so the matchups are still really surprising.
Those are
me.
That's the fun part.
Yeah, I know.
They're surprising to me because I forgot.
The South region 2 seed is Arrival. Going off, this is another fucking tough one. Why is two? Why these all seem like 8-9s to me, or 2-3s?
Yeah.
The 2 seed Arrival versus the 15 seed Edge of Tomorrow. Oh my God,
there's actually even some overlap in like themes and topics.
Yeah, there are.
There sure is.
Oh man, that's tough.
The 3 seed in the South region is The Big Short, going up against the 14 seed Game Night.
Very different. Very different movies there.
Indeed. The 4 seed is The Cabin in the Woods, going against the 13 seed Eighth Grade.
Curious.
That's spicy.
Yeah, we're going to forget all about these matchups by the time we get to the next one. And then we're going to be like, oh, shit, that's right. We have to compare these two movies. The 5 seed in the South region is Gravity, going up against the 12 seed Boyhood. The 6 seed is Birdman, going up against the 11 seed Steve Jobs.
Wow. Steve Jobs was 2015?
That sounds right.
That's a movie that could have existed in any decade, and I probably would believe it.
I'm much more familiar with the Ashton Kutcher version.
Yep.
Jobs.
Yep. The 7 seed in the South region is Her. And the 10 seed is Star Wars The Force Awakens.
So that's going to be a real issue with me, because I really, really, really love Force Awakens, but I really, really love Her.
Remember when somebody brought up Her Smell? And I said I hadn't done enough drugs when I started watching it, so I turned it off. So I ended up doing enough drugs, and I watched it. I hated that movie.
Elizabeth Moss?
Yeah, she's great, but it's just she's toxic and pushes away everybody around her and is mean, and it's just five different vignettes of her life being an asshole to everyone around her.
Well, the good news is you did do a lot of drugs.
Yeah, I think that's the takeaway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the plus side, we did destroy the Sun Sphere. We did knock over the Sun Sphere. The South Region 8 seed is Parasite. And the 9 seed is the Florida Project.
I think Parasite, as evidenced by our pick last week, is one like from 2019 that's kind of a no-brainer of getting on this. There were a couple that we considered, like Marriage Story. I think Booksmart is 2019. Yep. But that's pretty much a slam dunk, at least in this room. But there's not many of them.
Yeah. And then we go to the West Region. The number one seed there is Ex Machina, going up against the 16 seed, the winner of the play-in game between Planet of the Apes and Sing Street.
this is Rise of the Planet of the Apes or Dawn?
I think we decided that we were going to present this as the trilogy.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I think we all agree that Dawn is the best of that. So, I mean, if we want to point to one movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
The two seed is Get Out. Going up against the 15 seed Looper.
Looper.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Ooh.
You guys like Looper a lot, right?
I like Looper a lot.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm way further down on Looper than you guys are, but certainly worthy of inclusion.
I do think that Emily Blunt pantomiming smoking a cigarette scene will stay with me forever.
It may just
be because I used to be a smoker, but the idea that she, I think, would be smoking if she could, but she can't. And so she pantomimed, I don't know, it just really stuck with me. The movie's good.
The 3 seed is Interstellar, going up against the 14 seed Manchester by the Sea. Hey, Casey on Casey Affleck.
Oh, Casey on Casey Crime.
I actually popped in Interstellar the other day and rewatched it because I got a 4K version of it.
Oh, how does that shit look?
Oh, it looks so fucking badass.
Oh. I'm telling you, that's the space porn shots in that movie absolutely rule.
Yeah, I am. It's one of those movies, like, I mean, how Nolan shoots things and everything. It reminds me of those best parts of The Prestige where you get in and constantly the story drives so far that you've like, oh, an hour's just gone by.
Yeah.
And that's the way Interstellar is. The 4 seed is The Wolf of Wall Street, going up against the 13 seed Bad Times at the El Royale.
Ooh.
This is definitely the wordiest matchup.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think so.
That's tough.
Yeah. So we got both of the, what's his name? Director.
Yeah, we do.
Cabin of the Woods guy.
Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard. The 5 seed is Inside Out. Hey, we got Inside Out and Get Out. Versus the 12 seed Paddington 2.
Paddington 2 makes me so happy good. It's in here.
I think it's my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
Ooh, he didn't make that movie.
No, but it looks like he did.
Everybody in the world just got on their fucking keyboards. And Paddington 2 is not. The 6 seed is Zero Dark 30, going up against the 11 seed Black Klansman.
Ooh, there's some tough, tight matchups on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's like a slam dunk, really.
Yeah. And the 7 seed is The Descendants versus the 10 seed Scott Pilgrim versus The World.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rounding out the West Region, we have the 8 seed Black Swan versus the 9 seed Dunkirk.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Plenty of Nolan in here, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's
yeah.
True.
Lots of good movies to choose from. And again, we say it again, we know that there are movies out there that deserve to be on this list. This is our list.
Yeah, we really cut a lot of strong contenders. You know, only had one Denis Villeneuve movie in there, even though we could have done one or two others. You know, we went light on the horror genre, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It Chapter One was considered.
I'll go run down the list of the ones that we did not do. And these are all things that hurt, and you could probably argue their way into the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Moneyball,
yeah.
Drive, The Favorite. The Rider, which I saw recently.
Oh, what'd you think?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Kubo and the Two Strings. Yeah. Warrior. Marriage Story.
Been more Tom Hardy with Warriors.
I know. Marriage Story. Then there's Argo, Star Trek Into Darkness, One Cut of the Dead, Chef, Train to Busan, Edge of 17, If Beale Street Could Talk, First Reformed. That might be one of the big ones that we cut, because that's the one that just keeps gaining all this momentum from a lot of people who've seen it recently and everything. But, you know,
I mean, do you like it?
I watched it once and I liked it, okay. But I haven't gotten to the point where I'm like, yes, best decade of the decade. Not yet.
I got you. I'm the same way.
Wind River, which is you guys still need to see that.
I still haven't seen it yet.
Shame.
Yeah. Free Solo. Moonlight. The Lego Movie. The Handmaiden, which I mentioned up top, is a really good movie, and I think maybe a little bit more time. We all watched it. Maybe we'd have put this in there, but we just don't have the time to do that. Dark Waters, which came out last year. Death of Stalin. Your Name.
What is Your Name?
That's an animated.
That's right.
Enemy, which is a Denis Villeneuve. The Endless, which is a great movie. And
it's so good.
Yeah. It Chapter One, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Hunt for the Wilder People, which I mentioned. Yeah. Room, Shoplifters, which is great. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. What We Do in the Shadows. That's a tough one.
I know.
Yeah. True Grit. The Vavitch, which I don't think any of us liked in this room.
No. I keep trying to talk myself into this movie.
Yeah.
Anytime I watch it, I'm like, no, it's not.
I wrote a sin recently that referenced the Vavitch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Coming soon. Spring Breakers. The probably the biggest hurt for me is that you guys haven't seen Sicario yet.
I've seen Sicario.
You've seen it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And I liked it. I didn't think that it was at the level of the
best. It's the biggest, it's maybe probably the biggest hurtful one that's not on here. And then Good Time, which was
Safdie Brothers,
who did Uncut Gems last year. That was the ones that were considered to be on this list and just didn't make it. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Likewise.
Yeah,
Likewise!
Baby. Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
You know what Likewise does? So it's an app on your phone. Mm-hmm. It's one of them things for your phone.
Yeah, you go to an app store and you get it.
You go to an app store. You go to your Google Play app store. You go to your Apple app store.
Mm-hmm.
And you download this thing. But also, this thing is like fully integrated. It actually sends you communication, too, based on your preferences and stuff like that. I get emails from them saying everything that's leaving the streaming services, so like Netflix, Hulu, HBO Go, and all that stuff, they'll send you that information like up front. Like I said last time, like if you see a movie that you like or you're interested in or something like that, recommended to you because of your other preferences, you can click through that and it'll show you exactly where it is.
This is such a handy thing. This is like the best part of the Surface for me. It's just the idea that, you know, that you can not only they suggest you a movie or a book or whatever, can tell you where you can get it and where it might be leaving or whatever.
Yeah.
And everything. It's the most useful thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it even extends to restaurants too. We've used it for several different restaurants, both within this city and when we've been traveling. So based upon the type of cuisine that you like, they'll recommend it in your area.
Pretty much all forms of entertainment, right? Like just food, TV shows, music,
podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those things.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
You guys should check it out.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't cost nothing.
I typed in poutine. And that, because I like poutine.
Yeah.
Make sure to spell that
perfectly. Yes.
P-O-U-T-I-N-E. It's a Canadian delicacy.
Yes, it is.
French fries, cheese curds, and gravy.
It's a lot of things.
And it's ironically, even though it is super trendy in the U.S. as like a chefy foodie trend, there's not a lot of it in Middle Tennessee. But now
true.
I know where to go to get poutine. Mm. And which poutine is the highest rated. And I'm going to go on a little bit of a tour.
A poutine tour.
I'll report back in a couple of weeks and give you the best poutine.
Nice.
All thanks to Likewise telling me where to go to find it.
Yeah. So you can download it from the app store of your choice. Or if you're on the interwebs on your laptop or your computer or your tablet or whatever, go to Likewise.com/Sincast. and that will let them know that we sent you and that we love them and we know you will too.
All right, so we have time to do the play-in games. We will do the play-in games. Woo. And get our brackets all fixed up and no more of this, you know, two team bullshit on the one, you know. But in the first round, the North region, we have the 16 seed Toy Story 3 versus Sinister. Mm. Whoever wins this plays Mad Max Fury Road. Mm. All right. So this is a tough one.
It really is.
It's tougher than you think.
Yeah.
Because I think if you were to just go by quality of film, Toy Story 3 is probably the better movie. Mm. But maybe as far as enjoyment, it's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many different ways. If you look at originality, there's no contest that Sinister wins.
Right.
If you look at visual effects, well, then Toy Story 3 wins.
Mm-hmm.
But I started to say earlier, because I didn't understand how we were doing this, that Sinister scared the shit out of me.
Uh-huh.
And there are a couple of images from this movie that are like nightmare worthy, that stay with you, that are like freaky, trippy, scary. And then there's just a lot of creep and suspense in between those. But I don't get that with a lot of like modern horror. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people look at The Nun and they're like, oh, she's freaky, I'm going to have nightmares about The Nun. And I think she just looks stupid.
Yeah.
But like the is it like a Super 8 film that he
finds?
Yeah,
it's either 8 or 16 millimeter. I can't remember what it is.
And then these movies he's watching about the shit that, oh God, there's that one with the tree and the hanging, and it'll never leave me. It's very,
that's
very
the opening
creepy.
Shot of the movie.
Yeah, but if they come back to it too.
I know. Yeah, for a better context.
The one that obviously always gets me, although there is some cheating going on in that scare, is the lawnmower one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it goes and it just shows the family at the beginning and they're all like having fun, watching TV and everything. And then, and I think the thing is called, like, the film that he opens up is called like Lawn Work or something like that. Yeah. And so you just see the family just all watching TV and stuff. And then you just see the like push mower and you just see it. And then like all of a sudden, like someone just shows up in the frame and the mower goes over.
Yeah.
And you just hear this, scream and everything. It's like everything's just well done on that. There's something about the found footage in this that is way scarier than any movie purporting to be found footage.
Yeah, because it's blocked better, I think, in the way that it reveals stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, the main boogeyman, I think that even though that's probably the least of the actual scares, it's still creepy as shit because you don't see all of his face. You can just see the features, which are so freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Freaky features.
Freaky features.
Yeah. So I think Scott Derrickson did a perfect job in staging these to where when they are revealed, you get those chill bumps.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like all horror directors talk about getting this effect, but very few of them do it.
Yeah.
Or certainly do it successfully, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And then Sinister has its problems. I mean, the ending is what a lot of people talk about on Sinister. I don't like the ending very much either.
What is the ending?
So they move. They think the house is the problem.
Oh, that's right.
It follows them.
And it follows them. And when Mr. Boogie shows up and the little girl kills the whole family, uh-huh. and everything, it's basically like, now you can join us and everything.
Oh,
and
that, yeah.
It you know, it's just not, it, I mean, it's not what I'd want out of all of that. But still, it doesn't diminish what we've seen in the movie. So.
Yeah, that movie's good. I want to watch it again now.
Yeah.
I'm also pretty sure if you go back and check the tape, that sweater Ethan Hawke wears in this movie is not too different from the Knives Out sweater Chris Evans is famous for now.
I think it was more of a cardigan, wasn't it?
Fuck you. I was trying to make a fun reference. Dick.
He's like a, is he a documentarian or is he a, like a writer?
He's a writer. Yeah, he's trying to write a book about some like old crime stuff.
That's right, because that's why they move into the house.
He moves into the house, doesn't tell his wife. His wife is like, you didn't move in this house because of some murder, did you? And he's like, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do it for that.
The murder house.
Yeah, exactly.
Ethan Hawke's drank a lot of bourbon over the last decade. Because he's a bourbon drinker in this. He's a bourbon drinker in Boyhood and in First Reformed.
Yeah. Maybe he's just a bourbon drinker, and that's just, he slides it into all his roles.
Must be.
It has a creepy-ass credits ending credit sequence too. Just the music and just the way the credits come up on the screen.
That's right.
And everything. Really that. Cool. So yeah, I love this. What about Toy Story 3?
Nowhere near as scary.
Nowhere near as scary.
Dude, you say that, but that whole furnace thing is jarring.
I mean, depending on your age. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Is this movie considered great because of its ending?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, starting from probably that furnace scene on, everything else is kind of paint by numbers.
Everything else is every Toy Story you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the fact that they get saved and then Andy gives the toys to the little girl,
mm-hmm.
and we see how happy it makes her. That's what we sign off on at the end of that. But I don't know. Do we really think all that stuff before it is just great stuff?
Like Buzz suddenly having a Spanish button?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
not funny.
I think it's funny at the beginning, but then it goes on way too fucking long.
It's just, well, why would he have one option, Spanish or English? That's it? If you're going to add another language, you got German in there, you got French,
Japanese.
You got
France.
Russian. Like, I mean, it's
French fries.
Anyway.
But yeah, this is the one where they're in the like daycare, right?
Yeah.
And the toys that are already in the daycare don't want the new toys because they will get played with more.
Right.
And so they banish them and everything. And
I mean, I'm fine with that story. This is my
favorite. I hate to say that I don't like the movie.
Right, right, right.
But it just feels like we really consider this great because of its ending.
Yeah, yeah, you get a point there. Because without that ending, I mean, the movie doesn't fall apart, but it's not memorable at all.
Mm-hmm.
That ending punched me in the gut so hard that I ended up just loving the movie.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised, and this is not an insult. I wouldn't be surprised if they started there and built the rest of the movie around that. That
sure.
They had that moment. Aha! This will gut everybody. Let's work backwards.
Yeah, and I think there's a shot. It's animated, but of Andy playing with the girl with the toys before he leaves.
I think so.
And I think that's what got me the most, is because he's reconnecting with his childhood through, I forget what the relation is with the girl to him, he's reattaching himself to his childhood while still making this big transition, and he's not really broken up about it or anything like that. He's like, I'm ready to do some adult stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like this movie.
It's okay.
Yeah. No, it's a good movie.
It's in the bracket for a reason.
It's my favorite Toy Story movie by far.
Well, that's a statement.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say Sinister for this.
Sinister.
I think Toy Story 3 is a better made movie.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I like Sinister better. I would watch this one over Toy Story 3. If you gave me the two Blu-rays right on, you know, in front of me and say, pick one, I'd watch Sinister.
You take.
I'm same. sorry if you thought your vote was going to count. And for me, I'm often going to make these calls that way. If you put these two in front of me, which would I choose to watch? And again, I agree with Chris. I think Toy Story 3 is the better big picture, well-made, technically, yada yada film. But I'm on record how I feel about the Toy Story films as they go on and how I think they lose originality. And even if they still have heart, I would rather see something new and unique and original, and Sinister was all of that.
Did you watch this before you send it?
Toy Sinister? Story 3?
No, Sinister.
Yes. No. No, but I watched it twice when I sent it.
Oh, okay, I got you. My question is, would this have been a movie that you would have gone out of your way to watch?
No.
Because, you're not seeking not out big, horror unless it's titties and whatever.
Right. That's very succinct. Thank you.
I don't watch any horror unless it's titties.
They got the bigger titties in this one.
Exactly.
There are some other aspects to the horror movies I like besides just titties, but... no, I would not have gone out of my way to see it. And also, maybe there was a little sentimental thing in my vote, because I have often said this is my favorite Sins video.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Because it is, to date, still one of the
5-10 funniest ones we've made, and it's rare that I can rewatch a Sins video and still laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that one does it for me. So
I'm gonna make it unanimous. It'll be Sinister.
Wow!
Sinister
surprises.
It is a surprise. It's a surprise that it made the bracket, and now it moves on to face Mad Max Fury Road.
Nice knowing you, Sinister.
Yep. In the East region, the 16 seeds, Deadpool versus Coco. We doing another Pixar here. Whoever wins this one, whoever, like their people, will go up against Inception in this bracket. So Deadpool versus Coco.
I'll tell you what. Can we start with Coco?
Yeah.
I was not expecting to like Coco nearly as much as I was.
I was not either.
It has a lot of the themes similar to Kubo and the Two Strings about descendants and you know, not forgetting anything.
Guitars.
This one got me right in the feels for sure when the grandma sings Remember Me at the end.
Oh
my God. I mean, you can't be a human and not tear up at that point. But yeah, I think the animation is as spectacular as anything you've seen from Pixar before. The story is surprisingly fun but deep. About a story from, you know, visiting the afterlife and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The villain is very memorable.
Yeah, I didn't expect to like Coco either. Pixar had been on this kind of a bad streak for a bit, and then that was ready to come out, and I was, I don't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed it when I watched. I really liked it.
That animation is, I mean, when you set your animation in this otherworldly setting, you can really do anything, and clearly their imaginations just brought through this amazing imagery. I mean, it's just stunning.
Yeah. What do you think about Coco?
I liked it. I saw it one time.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really move me. I feel like I'm dead inside.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I know he likes it more than me. I think Dicer likes it more than me. But I didn't hate it. I didn't be like, oh, not like Good Dinosaur where I'm like, fuck this garbage. I just, it's more like Bug's Life for me where I, you know, it didn't really wow me the way it did everybody else, but I see some goodness in it.
Mm-hmm. All right. It goes up against Deadpool.
Yeah.
Talk about a movie I didn't expect to like.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They, remember Deadpool, if you remember the San Diego Comic-Con before the movie came out, there was a trailer for it that is, I guess, pretty famous now at this point, but San Diego Comic-Con, somebody in the back like filmed this trailer and then put it online, and
right,
you're not supposed to do that, but right, everybody saw it, and so I was like, oh, so he just talks to the camera and says a bunch of fucks. That's hilarious. And
that's funny.
And so I was not expecting to like it, and it was coming out in February, which is typically not a good landing spot. Although Valentine's weekend is usually a pretty good primo spot.
Very well marketed with Valentine's ads, a lot of very creative trailers and posters, you know, making, you know,
once they got the green light.
Yes. 'Cause
wasn't it, okay, you may have been going to this anyway, but was it determined that he leaked that footage? That Ryan Reynolds
did. I don't remember.
I think that is the general hypothesis, but he has not confirmed. I don't think anybody's confirmed that.
But he's winked at it a few times, right?
I think he has winked at it a few times, but not even so strongly as he's saying it was me.
Because I haven't even seen that trailer that footage of that trailer that you were talking about. I've just heard about it. So from that trailer itself, it didn't look good.
Not to me, but again, you're watching somebody shot in the back of a theater or wherever that was, one of those meeting rooms, and we had not seen anything like Deadpool, really.
No.
To this point, and really all it looked like to me was, ha ha, wisecrack, fuck this, and what, you know, and I was like, this is not funny to me. And probably if you showed me that same trailer today, because I'm more indoctrinated into the character, then I would find that funny.
Yeah.
But the way that was coming off, I was like, no, no, this is not going to be good at all. And then I went and watched it. And of course, I love Deadpool.
Yeah. And Ryan Reynolds before that point was very much Van Wilder. And I guess had started acting in those shitty action movies, right?
Yeah, he had a handful of movies that people have seen, but never really vaulted him into that otherworldly status.
Yeah. Like, Green Lantern, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, Green Lantern.
Safe House.
Safe House, which, and then there were a couple others. There was Just Friends. And
yeah,
there was,
yeah, yeah. Good Luck Chuck.
No, he's not in that.
No, that's Dane Cook.
Oh, that's right.
Was it Definitely Maybe that I've talked about? What was it? The Proposal? Was that what?
Yeah,
that
was with Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
He was in a lot of these movies that people had seen, but none of them had really vaulted him into this big, huge star status.
Yeah.
Van Wilder was like the height of his popularity for a while.
Yeah.
And then that came out, and Deadpool came out, and then suddenly he was, you know, A-lister.
You played the game, right?
What?
You had played the Deadpool game before, right?
It's fun if you like jumping around and slicing things with swords.
I do.
All right, so how are we going to vote on this?
Well, I think I know where you're leaning. This is a tough matchup because I really, really, really love Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think it's held up very, very well. I thought the second one was very, very good, too.
It was. It was just more of the same, and I don't think people, you know, I think you get that type of thing sort of wears you down after a while.
Yeah. I'm going to lean towards Coco because these are both singular movies, even though the other one had a sequel. But like you said, before these came out, you hadn't seen anything like it before. A little bit with Kubo, with Coco. Coco Kubo? Oprah?
Uma. Kruger would never allow two Cocos.
No. That's just a big faux pas.
So I'm going with Coco.
Okay.
Oh. Me or me, babe?
You go.
Well, Deadpool it is. I actually can't. This is dumb. In the comics, they would do this because Deadpool always does these alternate universe adventures. But I can't stop thinking about Deadpool in the undead afterlife from Coco.
Ooh.
Like running around quipping and kicking ass. That would be a very fun visual. Coco's fine. Coco's good. I'm going to watch Deadpool 20 times over the rest of my life, and I might watch Coco one more time.
And now that Disney owns all of that, they can do that if they
want.
They
can do that if they want, and they probably will, let's be honest. And there'll be the lightsabers in there, too. Because why not?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Deadpool as well. Sorry, Pixar.
Deadpool.
I love you. But again, you put these two movies in front of me, I'm going to pick Deadpool every time.
Captain Deadpool. Nah, just Deadpool.
Deadpool will play against Inception.
Interesting.
Yes. On to the South region, the 16 seed play-in game is A Quiet Place versus The First Avengers.
Ooh. Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. This is one of only two MCU movies in the bracket.
This and Black Panther?
Black Panther. Both of which I thought, obviously, were worthy of inclusion.
Sure.
Iron Man is our favorite we've talked about, but that was 2008. Yeah. It's a tough matchup. I really like me some Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about the second one coming up?
I've tried to avoid that trailer like the plague.
Really?
I don't want to know anything about what is coming up.
You are excited to see more of that universe.
I am. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know.
It felt to me more like when it came out and made all this money, they were like, oh, they're going to try and talk him into doing two. And I was like, where do you go with this?
I could see it a couple of different ways. I'm maybe talking out of my ass. You could show like a parallel story going on to the sequences of the first one. Or I think you could explore that story further and make it interesting.
Okay. It struck me as a little weird. Now, I think it made a shit ton of money, right? A Quiet Place.
It did.
And that's probably part of the reason they were able to back up the Brinks truck and say, just give us something compelling.
Because this is Krasinski's directing this one again,
and
right?
writing. Yeah, and writing.
I've seen this trailer probably 3 billion times.
Is it on front of everything?
It's on the front of everything. It like, ever since I've started going back to movies a lot to do these mini pods, it's insane now how many times you see a certain trailer. Like, there's no variety anymore, it doesn't seem like. Like, before the year started, I saw that Like a Boss trailer probably 500,000 times.
Oh, and it's the worst, and it's interminable, too.
Yeah, and it seemed like it was never going to come out. Like, I had seen it for 4 months leading up to its release. Now it's The Invisible Man. The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben Affleck and The Way Back and all that. That basketball Hoosiers type movie or whatever. Ooh. take charges, press, blah, blah, blah. like I'm you listen to Affleck trying to coach basketball. It just doesn't make sense, man.
Take charges.
Yeah. Press it. Keep pressing. Stealing. Taking charges. That trailer I don't like. I don't like that Quiet Place trailer at all. That new one.
I've just seen the teaser.
Mainly because it looks like it's going to be bigger and more like there's going to be more sound and more like stuff that they're going to have to avoid. Whereas the first one is so, everything about that movie is the experience in the theater.
Yeah.
You are quiet with them.
Yeah.
But this movie looks like something where you can munch your popcorn and
it looks very like Walking Dead-y to me.
Yeah.
And it could be excellent. You know, Quiet Place was excellent. So mm-hmm. let's give him fair shake.
I will be watching this and I'm hoping it's good. I mean, I know from the trailer, though, I'm like, you guys are experts at walking around in places and you let a little fucking tripwire thing, you know, you run over a tripwire without even seeing that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what? Maybe it's different in the movie. Who knows?
Adapt or die, bitches.
Yeah.
It's weird because I don't think, Jeremy, you and I didn't go to the theater to see this, right?
I did not, no.
So I didn't get that experience that I kind of wish I did. But I still, as I was watching at home, was perfectly still,
mm-hmm.
like really like attuning myself to this,
yeah,
with no distractions whatsoever. And it's just a, it's so well acted. It's so well paced.
Mm-hmm.
It's so well done with the audio quality. It's a good movie.
Yeah, mm. It really is. Like I said, both of these movies are experiences with a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Quiet Place is the one where everybody's sort of trying to outdo each other in their quietness. The Avengers is one where everybody's trying to outdo each other in like how big of fans they are and how much they're getting into it and everything. I will state once again, the Avengers is another movie that I think people think too highly of because of its ending.
Yes, I agree with that. Did you see this? You were still at the theater this when it came out, right?
Yes.
And was it a memorable event seeing it?
It was.
Or did you pre-watch it?
I watched it before, but we also had midnight shows.
Oh.
And I believe this was, I'm trying to remember if the regular practice of starting movies at 7 and 10 had started yet. I'm not sure, because mostly during my day, midnight shows were the main thing.
Thursday before midnight.
Yeah. Although we had had stuff that started early before, but it wasn't a normal practice like it is now, where like everything opens Thursday at 7 o'clock now.
Uh-huh.
But I believe it was one show, and whatever show it was, a 10 or a midnight, doesn't matter. I walked from theater to theater, watching people react to the Loki and Hulk thing.
Nice.
And it was just, it was a great thing.
Oh, that's cool.
To be in the theater for.
I bet.
Watching that.
Especially seeing multiple reactions to it.
Yeah. I will say it again. It's my favorite part of ever working at movie theaters was crowd reaction stuff. Was that.
My part was fucking in the nacho closet.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Well, I'm mostly kidding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some people,
I know exactly what closet you're talking about too.
Some people got a little extra with their nachos.
Oh, luckily they were sealed.
Yeah, yeah,
they were exactly. All in sealed boxes. We maybe crushed a few chips. No big whoop.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't want even nachos that came in a box that had semen on them. But like,
I don't even want to keep talking about this. They're going to retroactively like fine you or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
So, what do we want to go on this one?
I think this was my favorite MCU theater experience too. Not only because of the Puny God thing,
mm-hmm.
but really just all the way through. Like I saw it opening weekend and just, it wasn't over the top like the Star Wars, the Rise of the Skywalker that we just saw where the woman's clapping throughout the whole time.
Yeah.
It was just normal, like enthusiastic fans, like saying ooh and ah and that kind of thing. Like when Thor and Cap like hit the hammer and stuff like that for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard that noise in that theater where it's like, brrr!
Mm-hmm.
Like that was just such a good time.
It happened, but in 10 years, because even Endgame had a lot of clappers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And less people just reacting.
Yeah.
It was almost, it's almost like now we are anticipating these moments because we've been taught that they're going to happen. Yeah. Whereas in Avengers, when the one for me, and I've brought this up before, is when they're on the bridge in New York and like Cap turns his shield to Tony and Tony just instinctively blasts it with a ray that then beams off and hits this dude that's standing catty corner to him. And that was exhilarating, seeing two superheroes I'd seen on their own instinctively working together and being more powerful that way. And then by the time we get to Infinity War and Endgame, you know, that kind of shit doesn't wow us anymore. It has to be 200 heroes showing up at once and saying, on your left, if we're even going to get moved, I guess. I don't know. I do remember that experience, though, the Avengers experience. I had never seen anything quite like that.
Yeah. And at the time, it was a miracle of filmmaking, right? To build this universe and get these guys together.
It was. I mean, they took this gamble back in 2008 with Iron Man, and they, you know, put Sam Jackson at the end of that, and then cross studio with the Incredible Hulk, putting him at the end of, well, putting Downey at the end of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
Talking about the Avengers and everything. Like, they took a gamble because it could have been one of those things where they said, Avengers is coming, and then those movies tanked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding.
It would have had nothing.
And they did it within 4 years. You know, they even recast Hulk and had a better Hulk than they did at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, everything went right with this movie.
Yeah.
And especially getting Joss Whedon on there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm going to pick A Quiet Place in this matchup.
I'm going to pick Avengers.
Yeah, didn't you just do that?
Fuck. I pick Avengers. And it's just that so far that's the logic I'm using every time is which one am I going to watch more over the next 10 years? And it's going to be Avengers. I think you could make a solid argument that Quiet Place is easily a better made, you know, whole package of a film.
Mm-hmm.
But Avengers is just so fun, and so few movies that try to be fun actually work hard at it.
Yeah.
Most movies that just want to be fun are lazy. It's Avengers. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. It's just probably one of my most watched movies of the last decade. I've probably seen this up with Social Network levels of times.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it fewer times than I've seen Passengers.
Yeah.
But that's not really saying anything.
That's not saying anything.
The Avengers goes up against the Social Network.
Oh, nice.
In the South region when we get to that. The West region, here's our final play-in game. We have the 16 seeds Planet of the Apes and Sing Street. Again, we're kind of saying Dawn is the best, but we're also saying that this should be looked upon as a trilogy and not just one of the movies.
Yeah. Are we all on board with Dawn, Rise, and War in that order?
I think so.
War's not bad.
No.
But it's relative to the other two, I don't think it's as strong.
It ends up feeling like other movies that came before it and inspired it more than the other two do.
Spartacus.
Well, Spartacus or The Great Escape. There's a bunch that last movie ends up feeling like it's aping.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but does Woody last until the end of the movie?
No.
He dies like halfway through, right?
Sorry, right. Spoiler.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to talk spoilers on some
of this. He dies. It's about three-fourths of the way through.
That's right. Yeah, because he gets all like blind drunk or something like that, right?
Well, he's got the disease. Yeah, he knows he's going to die, and so he just chooses to end his own life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is just one of those. It's amazing. This is a big studio film.
Yeah.
There's so many great little action pieces in it.
Yeah.
Especially when the one gets behind the tank and starts shooting in that 360.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that movie's so good.
And that's where you really start to see the rift between Caesar and Koba.
Mm-hmm.
And that dynamic is awesome. And I guess it's towards the end of Dawn, where actually probably in the middle of Dawn, where Caesar finally like pulls rank on him. And he's like, no, I am the alpha here. And I think he does something ape-like. And you see Koba like just barely like cower.
Well, they do fight even in that, like, I guess it's like a some kind of boiler room.
Yeah. Well, that's towards the end, though, right?
I don't know, because I think that's when Koba then goes down to the humans, to their gun range, and like steals their gun and then comes back up and shoots him. Yeah, yeah. But I love that bit when Koba's challenging his decision to let the humans work on this dam, and he's like, let them do their human work, and Koba points at his scars and says, human work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I fucking love that part.
It is Koba's, very cool.
Koba's almost better than Caesar in that
movie. Yeah. And it's Tony Kebbell, right?
Toby
Kebbell.
Yeah.
And I really like in this trilogy that it's all three different sets of humans. Like there's the James Franco, and then there's the Jason Clark. I don't know why I did that.
Yeah.
He's got a weird face. And then you got the Woody. And you don't see that very often with franchises like this.
No, right? I think they had a Shepherd early on with Rise, and I think they were cautious. And if this works, we'll go on to the next phase, which will be years later, and we'll have a different person. And if it doesn't work, we'll have tried. But I think the plan from the beginning was to tell three stories ahead of the Planet of the Apes story we're all familiar with Hesper.
And is it Rise that has all those little allusions to the original Planet of the Apes?
Dawn does as well, yeah.
Where the ship is being launched.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. Where it's actually syncs up with that timeline.
Yeah, yeah. There's news footage about the losing the craft and they don't know where it went. And all that stuff.
That's right.
Nice touches.
Now that Disney has bought Fox, I know last week there was some announcement they are going to make more Planet of the Apes movies, but nobody knows if they're going to continue this or just go back and reboot themselves. I hope they continue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's set up nicely. You could reboot the original Planet of the Apes and still have it flow with this trilogy just by making it the next movie in this series.
And as long as we're at it, like, eliminate all evidence of the Marky Mark version.
Yes.
By the way, it's funny, too, that Rise of the Planet of the Apes has so much in common with 12 Monkeys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, by the end of the movie, it's talking about a virus that's going through all these different areas and everything. And,
sequence is at the end of Rise. It's, like, over the credits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, where like, it pulls back over the map and you see, like, the lines showing the virus spreading around, which is a little extra eerie in today's climate.
Indeed.
Apes good.
Mm-hmm. It goes up against Sing Street, which, have you seen Sing Street, Jeremy?
No, I've seen Begin Again twice.
Okay.
If that counts.
All right, it does.
I mean, it's the same guy and style. I would love Sing Street.
Yeah, Sing Street is one of those great singular moments that I've had in the movie theater. Just, I mean, nothing like big crowd wise or anything like that, but
oh, you saw it in the theater?
I did.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it so much. This is a movie that's just in love with music and the time, the era, you know.
And this is the cast is every bit as chemistry working as It Chapter One or Stranger Things or anything like that. Those are all 80s-ish types of movies. This one only revels in its 80s-ness when it comes to the style of music itself.
Yeah.
And some of the fashion, too, but it's also in Dublin, so it's not like, people wearing leg warmers and slap bracelets and shit like that.
Yeah.
This is my favorite character in this entire movie is the bass player or the guitarist. He's like a virtuoso, but he's got this very odd demeanor. The dude with the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a delight. I love watching this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen it since then, but I love this. I love this a lot. And going up against Apes movies, it's a tough one.
It's definitely Little Mac going against Mike Tyson.
It's exactly what that is. I mean, you're it's possible that depending on your mood, you would like Sing Street better than any of the Apes movies.
Yeah.
But I'll go ahead and say that I'm going to pick the Apes here, even though Sing Street is just fantastic, and I hate seeing it go like this, but I like the Apes better.
I gotta pick the Apes too.
Mm-hmm.
Because the peak, which would be Dawn, the peak of the Apes trilogy is better, I think, than the peaks of Sing Street. Sing Street is a delightful story about, you know, falling in love and stuff like that. And it's gonna have nice staying power, but I don't think it hits the same heights.
I'm gonna vote Sing Street.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm kidding. I'll vote Apes because I haven't seen Sing Street. Although, if I did apply the logic of which would I put in, if you put them both in front of me right now, I would choose Sing Street. But I have to vote for the Apes.
All right.
So Planet of the Apes will be going up against Ex Machina.
Ooh.
All right. That's the play-in games. We're going to start doing brackets next week.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a taste in what we're going to be doing. A
little taste. Just the tip.
Yeah, that's right. I think we're going to have some brackets printed out, and we're going to try to, you know, you can follow along.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you are mad that we didn't put some certain movies in, and that's fine.
That's
what makes us, that makes fine. Us a special world.
That's right.
All right, everybody. It's time to talk about Mubi.
Yeah.
Mubi.
Can I say something about Mubi real quick?
Go for it.
Sure.
Okay. There's a lot of different ways that you can experience Mubi. Like if you want like head scratching, or whether you want to dive in to learn more knowledge, or you could do it like I did the other day, and you could do it horny. And I did it horny the other day.
Oh, I have a feeling. You may be talking about the same movie. Go ahead. Well,
it's two of them. So I started with another in the series of this Nicholas Winding Refn recommendations, and the ones that he's restored. And it's called One Shocking Moment.
Okay.
It's from the 60s. It's from 1965. And it's horny. It's horny as shit.
Horny as hell.
Yeah, it is. And it's a lot of fun. It's pretty short, but it's all about this Midwestern couple that moves out to L.A. and gets involved in all the luridness of the 60s L.A. and all that stuff. And there's S&M in there, and there's gropey and booby and like all kinds of sex stuff.
Right.
But it's also very pro-feminist, which I thought was very cool, too, even way back in the 60s. So that's where I started my horny tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a movie in there called Touch Me Not.
I was about to say, if you didn't say Touch Me Not, I was going to be like, no, there's a third one.
Yeah. No, there's that movie is horny in a different way. It's a very much an exploration.
I would even say it's not horny.
Exactly. Because it's this woman. It's hard to really explain this movie because it's almost presented as a documentary and almost as a fiction.
It's got a mix, I think.
Yeah, and it's, I guess the central thesis is that she's lost her ability, the main character, to feel intimacy and to feel anything from sex.
Yes.
And so while it is, you know, on the surface level, horny, there's definitely a deeper exploration going on in this movie.
Yeah, she it starts off with her, I think she's hiring a male prostitute.
And he's whacking off.
Yeah, and yeah, he's whacking off. And
see, it sounds like a documentary to me.
Yeah, it is. Then she goes to this hospital or sort of like a physical therapy place.
Yeah.
Where there are people who have disabilities, but they're also trying to learn how to, I guess, feel things with their significant others and everything.
Yeah,
and
it's like a sex therapy, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of the physical therapy.
So it's a guy, there's this one, I didn't understand why because the one guy who is in the hospital is married to this woman
mm-hmm.
in there, but it's a guy who is doing these exercises with him.
Mm-hmm.
And like the first thing is to like touch his face and everything. And then he has to report, what did it feel like touching his face?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, this is very strange. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there were some points. It's like, he's honest. He's like, it was kind of weird trying to get around his mouth area because mm-hmm. there's saliva there and everything. And he's like, I normally wouldn't be like this direct, but that's just the way I feel about this. And the guy is totally cool.
Yeah.
About everything, but like this main character keeps walking from place to place and trying to learn this for herself. And meanwhile, the director of the film is giving her all these notes and like asking her, why do you think I made this film?
Mm-hmm.
And everything like that. And so there's just a lot of weird, maybe weird interaction. Interactions going on in this movie where some look fake or look like a regular movie, or some look like, oh, this is something that she's really going through.
I'll tell you what looked real. Fucking orgy.
Yeah, I would say so.
This was the most interesting orgy I've ever seen
now
on
you
camera.
Have my attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Stanley Kubrick wishes he could film an orgy this
wow.
well. It really is. If you can use an orgy as a character development, it really is.
Kind of.
It really informs, especially the guy that you were talking about, who has some malformations of his body.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
Mm.
And it is, at times, it's sexy. And at times, it's some dude whacking off into a pillow, and that's it.
Well, yeah.
As she expressionlessly watches on.
It happens.
This is the weirdest movie I had ever.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, these are both a delight, I think so, in very different ways.
That's the point, though. You are going to see some unusual things. Sometimes you're going to see some things that are going to make you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're going to see some of the best movies you've ever seen mm-hmm. that you've never heard of before. And, you know, that's the greatness of this service, is because there's so many different kinds of movies that you are not normally, you don't normally have a chance to watch.
I know. And I've got a bunch of them queued up to watch later on, mm-hmm. too, because there's a really good batch, especially from Japan, that's on there right now that I'm going to dive into, maybe even tonight.
Yeah,
I also like they send you emails to tell you like what's coming to the service, what's leaving, what the theme is, and so it's, you can kind of plan ahead. You don't have to just jump on Mubi and go, what's new?
Yeah.
But also, if you go to Mubi.com/CinemaSins.
Uh-huh.
You can get 1 month for free.
1 month free. This is a great deal. This is a terrific deal.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that'd be like walking into a store and buying 60 movies for $0. That's essentially, I mean, you might struggle to fit all 60 in your life, depending on how hectic you are. But that's what we're basically offering. That's what Mubi is offering you through this special offer. Mubi.com/CinemaSins.
Mm-hmm.
1 month free, up to 60 movies. Everything from the horny to the documentary to the thoughtful to the pillows.
And sometimes all three.
Indeed.
Mubi.com/CinemaSins. Do it, do it, do it.
So we're going to do some recommends and warns.
Yeah.
Ooh. Totes amazeballs.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to call it a rec-a-warn, but for me, it's recommend.
Okay.
I'm more on the reca side than the warn. But I warn because you may not, be down with what Kevin Smith is popping here.
Oh.
Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can talk about this too.
All right, good. So let me start off firsthand, is that a lot of you who would pop this movie in are going to be like, oh my God, there's just so many like things that are kind of like groaner type of stuff. But man, I had enough fun with this that I really liked it.
Okay.
It's not as much. I don't like it as much as Jay and Bob Strike Back, mm-hmm. but reboot is just, it's funny because of all the funny like in jokes they have with all the different actors, the cameo appearances that are in here. They make fun of the reboot and the remake type of thing that's going on. And it's amazing how many like like big stars he actually got
it's
to
crazy.
Get into this thing.
Yeah.
And it's self-deprecating, about like all the different things that have happened in the Viewisk universe and everything.
Uh-huh.
There were some moments in here, and I actually don't want to spoil some of the moments that show up, but there is a cameo in here that just stops the movie for a second.
Huh.
And it's a person from a prior Kevin Smith movie turning around and explaining what's happened since the last time you saw him.
Huh.
And it's so funny how he talks about the plot of this movie and how like and then he does a really fun twist on a franchise that he's in.
Huh.
And everything, a name that he gives that franchise, and just the way he does it is fantastic. I love that. There's another big cameo in there. I can go ahead and tell you though. I mean, this is not a big spoiler. Jason Lee shows up again. Uh-huh. To play his Mallrats character, and I think it's Brody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part in there where he's explaining the difference between reboots and remakes. and he's like, you know, if you want to do reboot and you do this, you do a remake this. There's not room in Hollywood for sequels or anymore, or even squeakles. He's like making a reference to his own Alvin and the Chipmunks or something like that. And so like, it's a lot of fun if you are a fan of all the Kevin Smith stuff, if you're savvy about that universe and everything. There's going to be moments where you watch this and go, man, this is dumb. but I thought it was really sweet. I thought Jason Mewes and Harley Quinn Smith were really good together in this. Actually, both Kevin Smith's daughter and Jason Mewes' daughter is in this. But Harley Quinn Smith's got a pretty big role in this. But Jason Mewes and her are really good. And I thought it actually gave the movie its heart and everything. But yes, some of you out there have already seen this and you're like, man, this movie is dumb. But like, I tend to like dumb. And if you can make me laugh at least six times, which this movie did, I'm on board.
I did like that scene with Brody. They do one of the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back pause and look at the camera, like fourth wall breaks.
Yeah.
And like Jason Lee has this big smile, and then behind him you see Jason Mewes come out with the longest middle finger I've ever seen in my life. And he's looking at the camera, just flipping you off with that big ass bony finger.
Yeah.
There's a Glengarry Glenn Ross bit in here that's inspired. I didn't like it as much as Strike Back. I'm pretty much like Chris. I think he had a little bit better time with it than I did. Because even a lot of the stuff that will make you giggle is just a slight tweak on something from Strike Back that made you laugh.
Oh, okay.
And then there's the Ben Affleck part. Some of the cameos feel tacked on. They go to Ben Affleck, and he's on screen for like 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Just fucking doing his Boston accent and talking and making jokes.
Ben Affleck? Or as one of his characters?
One of his characters.
Yeah,
oh, okay. One from Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
But it felt to me very much, I'm very glad they reconciled. That is worth the whole movie to me, because I hated that they weren't talking anymore. But it took me out of, like, slowed the movie down to a crawl.
Oh, you're talking about Ben Affleck and Kevin Smith?
Yeah. I felt like there was a little bit of overindulgence in letting that scene go on for too long because of how close they are. Both to the fact that they reconciled. But anyway, I enjoyed the movie. I will watch it again. That's a good solid recommend.
I have your loaner that I'm going to watch
which
tonight.
Which means you'll never watch it.
I totally will.
I'll get it back in 6 months. Do you have a recommend or do you want me to go?
I have a rec-a-warn. So one night this week, last week, couldn't sleep. And so throw it on the premium channels. And right at the beginning of Cube 2, Hypercube.
Holy shit.
Oh, wow. This is like a Jeremy recommendation.
Do you guys remember seeing the first Cube?
Yes.
I don't think I saw it, but I remember it.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing because I caught it on VHS, and I don't even remember if it had a theatrical release. If
I don't
it did,
either.
It was very, very small. This is a cult movie that gives you very little explanation. All it is, this is the first movie. The first movie, there's like five people that wake up in a cube. They can go in between like a series of connected cubes that you go through little panels to get to. And you see at the very beginning that it's all booby-trapped. In the beginning of the first cube, there's this seam of like little dots and stuff like that that slices you into little cubey bits.
Yep.
And so I saw that first one, and the fact that it was unapologetic about not giving you answers and stuff like that, I loved that first cube. It is very low budget, not very good acting, that kind of thing. Never saw the sequel. So that was 97 was the first one. 2002 is the second one. And was kind of expecting the same thing. And kind of got the same thing. It has a little better effects. It's got very 2002 effects. It's got a similar premise. People wake up, you know, not knowing really what's going on. But I think the cast plays off of each other a little bit better. And the acting itself is better. And the resolution, I thought, was very satisfying. It ain't perfect, and it doesn't look like a studio film, but it was enjoyable, especially at like midnight.
What's the title again?
Cube 2 Hypercube. You know why? Why they call it that?
No.
The cube is hyper.
That's what I figured.
So instead of like a static thing.
Drank a bunch of red Kool-Aid.
Instead of a static thing, it's all moving all over the place, and it's like twisty, and it's doing all that stuff. And it
doesn't sound survivable.
Well, you got to watch until the end
of the
movie.
It's like in Tron Legacy when he like lands in Tron and goes into the games immediately and like fucking wins four straight games.
Shit.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
that
dude is dead six times.
Yeah. It's like the first time he's taken that thing off and he apparently can.
Yeah. He beats the best guy.
I know.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Hypercube. You would like Hypercube. It's got a very similar sleek blues and silver.
See, I would
rather
start with Cube 3 and work my way back.
Yeah.
You know how I like those unnecessary sequels.
Mm-hmm. So that's a Rekka Warn.
Okay.
More on the Rekka.
I'm going to give you a recommend, and I believe I talked about this the first year we did our podcast, because the same as I just did 2 weeks ago, I caught a marathon of it. I believe I brought it up, but this was before we were doing Recommends and Warns.
Okay.
The miniseries Hatfields and McCoys.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Kevin Costner and Bill Paxton are your two leads. Costner is Hatfield. Paxton is McCoy. You can watch this entire thing and still be confused.
You just know that they're on different sides.
And what this is very entertaining. There's a reason Costner keeps going back to Westerns, because he is very good at them.
Mm-hmm.
That TV show on Paramount Network, Yellowstone, he's excellent. Anytime he makes a Western movie, it's worth watching.
That's still going on, Yellowstone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of the biggest cable shows going.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he hates it. He hates doing it because, unlike a movie where he's there for a couple of weeks and he's done, he has to work for like 6 months and he doesn't like it. he being Costner.
Yeah.
All right, so this is based on the actual long-running feud between a family in West Virginia and a family across the border in Kentucky. To the point where I would recommend you watch this miniseries and then go to Wikipedia and just go down the rabbit hole of all the shit these two families did to each other, to where the governors of both states were sending troops to the border. It's fucked up. They started hating each other early on. But one of the things I wanted to point out is how weird everybody's name is. And, you know, you'd think back in the, you know, colonial days of America, every other guy would be John. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Bill, or you know, Jim. But Costner's playing a guy named Ants, A-N-S-E, and they call him Devil Ants. Devil Ants Hatfield. And his son is named John Z. John's with an S-E at the end of it.
Hmm.
John Z.
Huh.
John Z.
Yeah.
That's a stupid name. Sorry, Hatfields.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, most of the feud, at least in this miniseries, can be pinned on John Z. I'm not going to lie. He falls in love with a McCoy girl, a hot blonde. They go skinny dipping. He puts a baby in her before anybody finds out they want to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill Paxton's like, I'm not having no bastard Hatfield in my daughter's belly. Get out of my house. So kicks her out. But Kevin Costner's like, I'm not going to let you marry that girl. She's a McCoy, and we'll never have those unions, yada, yada. They ship the girl off to some cousin's house. And then Jenna Malone comes along. She's another McCoy. She's Nancy McCoy.
All right.
And she sleeps with John Z. And then they get out of bed, literally, and go to the courthouse to get married.
Oh.
Powers Booth, another Hatfield. His name is Wall. W-A-L-L.
Mm-hmm.
Wall. These people have weird fucking names. But it's basically because John Z can't stop fucking the McCoy girls is why they keep fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then one of the McCoy girls' brothers comes in. He says, I shot a man. You got to hide me. So they hide him. This is Jonzy Hatfield and Nancy McCoy hiding a McCoy who done a crime. Well, then the Hatfields come looking for this McCoy who done a crime. One of them gets a little too rough with the girl. That makes Jonzy angry. He goes after that guy, kicks his dog across the room.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, it ends up with basically the McCoys start sending bounty hunters across the state line.
Yeah.
With trumped up charges of, you know, harassment or whatever. And the Hatfields just keep killing them. For like 2 hours of this movie, it's bounty hunters coming across the line and getting murdered.
That's hilarious.
Until they finally hire, like, the real badass bounty hunter.
The real McCoy?
Well, actually, no, his name is, that's funny. His name is Frank Phillips, I think. He rode with Billy the Kid.
That's too normal of a name. Frank.
One of the Hatfield kids is called Cotton Top.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it's like 6 hours. Uh-huh. I was pretty riveted. It's hard to be riveted for 6 hours.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is how good Costner and Paxton are at anchoring. Because they're not in every scene, but they keep coming back around. And Costner just has that Southern cowboy way of speaking, just down to a science. I dug the hell out of it. And I found myself reading about the Hatfields and McCoys for like 2 hours after I was done watching.
Didn't you say Jenna Maloney is in there?
Jenna Malone. Is it Maloney?
It's Malone.
Oh. Jenna Malone's in it. Mayor Winningham.
Really?
There's one or two other names you would recognize, but for the most part, it's largely people you don't know. Except for those two leads and Powers Booth, of course.
Tom Berenger.
He's hardly in it.
You have, who else?
What was this on?
History Channel?
Two Saturdays ago.
No, History Channel is where it...
Oh, yeah, History Channel. Sorry, yeah. I said when.
And what, it's on Netflix now?
Yeah, and there's cussing. I guess what I'm saying is knowing that it's a History Channel production might make you not want to watch it. I have a strong suspicion that's why a lot of people haven't watched it. But it's well shot. It's very cinematic. It's R-rated. There's violence. There's cussing.
Spitting. So it's basically three episodes, but they're all like hour and a half movies, essentially. Yeah,
I really dug it. I think
check it out. Yeah,
it's in there. Yeah.
Kevin Reynolds. Nice one.
Reynolds. It's Kevin Reynolds. Really? That was my big whammy. I was gonna surprise with the, on you know, at the
How
end.
How long ago was this?
Oh, 8-10 years.
He's not working with Reynolds anymore, though, right?
No, he is.
Yeah.
Is he
came seriously? Out in 2012.
Oh, yeah, 2012. Wow. So that was 8 years ago. They keep. They can't quit each other.
They're frenemies.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously Kevin Reynolds has talent.
He's got something, yeah.
There's something else I saw recently. I'm going to look it up while you guys move on. But something else that Kevin Reynolds directed that I was going to bring up that I'd seen recently. But I'll get back to that in a minute. Do you guys either have another round of recommends or warns?
Well,
I do.
You brought up Kevin Costner, and I have to bring up a movie that I saw come up on cable the other day, 13 Days,
Ooh.
Which is a really good movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes, it is.
It came out in 2000, and basically nobody saw it. And,
yeah.
But I'm recommending it, although I did not see it all the way through on my viewing, but I watched a lot of it.
It was 2000?
Yeah, came out in 2000.
It feels like it was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, Costner's really not I don't feel like he's a big player in this movie. He's in it, but like it's the Kennedy show. In this.
Sure. Who plays Kennedy?
Bruce Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood.
yeah, I mean, who else? I can't remember who plays Robert Kennedy. It's somebody that you've seen before.
I remember liking this movie a lot, and I remember it being just as like it's obviously a tense situation, but I remember the movie being very tense.
Yeah, Stephen Culp plays Robert F. Kennedy, and Dylan Baker plays Robert McNamara. But it goes through all the different, you know. How close we were to having an actual war, and the really tough political sort of back and forth that the U.S. and the Russians had to do on this, because nobody wants to back down and be weak. Right. But also nobody wants to fire and start something
and destroy the entire planet.
So everybody's doing this high wire act.
Yeah.
where there's a scene towards the end where Robert Kennedy is talking to one of the Russian guys, and like he goes, "You're gonna have to take all these missiles out of Cuba," and the guy's like, "Well, you're gonna have to take your missiles out of Turkey and all these other places," and he's like, "Can't do that."
Yeah.
and so that has to be a good enough answer to the Russian premier guy.
There's so many dead ends to this where you're like, there's no way around this. Like, this is gonna happen.
There's a great fucking scene in this where there's some ships in the, I don't remember where exactly it was, where the ships were, but there's some American ships and some Russian ships doing some like drills or something like that or whatever. And they're told that they can't go across a certain spot.
Right.
And the war people all want to just blow away these ships because they're not supposed to be here. And if they get anywhere farther and everything. And then John F. Kennedy is like, "I need a direct line to the captain of that ship," and like bypassing all of his war people and everything. And he's like, he gets him on the phone. He's like, "I don't want you to fire anything at all. Wait for my command. Don't wait for anybody else," and everything. And it's just so, everything is so tense and so like, it's just well done.
And then the X-Men show up.
And
they fucking save the day, dude.
Yeah.
Right. Despite Magneto trying to fuck things up.
Right. But Roger Donaldson directed this. He's known for like Species and Cocktail and
nice. I like both of those movies.
And No Way Out and
No Way
like,
Out is awesome.
And
Costner. Costner.
Yep. But I think his best movie is that he also did The World's Fastest Indian, which was really good.
Is he still making movies?
Last movie he did was something called The November Man. Pierce Brosnan was in.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And then he did in one called Seeking Justice, and then I think that's a Statham movie called The Bank Job. But
I've seen that, too.
Yeah, he did Seeking. Dante's Peak.
Yeah!
He did Dante's Peak. But 13 Days is his best movie, and it's one that should have gotten a lot more attention back in the day. And it came out, it was a Christmas, a limited Christmas Day release back in 2000. And then it had an expansion in 2001.
Huh.
That sounds like an awards release, like they were expecting a nomination.
Or something. And they apparently, I don't know, it just didn't get that kind of wave and everything. And 2000 was Traffic, and it was Aaron Brockovich and all those movies. But 13 Days just kind of, I guess it's because nobody saw it, nobody cared, and whatever, but I highly recommend it. It's a great, great movie.
Nice. So. Nice.
You got any more?
I do.
I do too.
I think it's a rec-a-warn, but it's mostly a recommend. So I have never seen an episode of Downton Abbey in my life, but I just recently watched the movie. A movie came out last year. It was a big to-do with the DA fans, and of which there are many. Like from all walks of life, by the way, there was a Republican senator from or lawmaker from Tennessee that spent a bunch of campaign money decorating his office like Downton Abbey. People on all of the political spectrum love this show. If they've gotten into the show, your wife has watched the
My
show,
wife
right?
Loves the show.
So she's like a super fan or like a fan. So I had never seen it before. I knew that it was a little bit about classist type of thing, like the servants below and the royals above or whatever it is.
Upstairs, downstairs.
And so it was difficult getting into this and keeping up with all the names, all the characters who had been there, who hadn't been there, who's new to the series, that kind of thing. There's a Maggie Smith and there's an Imelda Staunton, which is really cool, seeing them go head-to-head. Maggie Smith is this dour, like, rapacious wit, like old lady that they can cut you with her words and stuff like that. And it's fun. It was very good. It was well done. It was well shot. There's a lot of Abbey porn. There's a ton of Abbey porn. Just sweeping shots of this location that I guess they use for the series and everything. The dynamics are pretty good between the upstairs and the downstairs. The only problem is now they're not slaves. They're servants and they are paid. I don't think they're paid very well, but they're paid. But the level of worship that the servants have to the upper class is a little icky. It's everybody's white, by the way. Of course, it's in Britain, but everybody's white. And like there's one thing where it's the whole conceit is the king and the queen are coming to visit and staying at Downton Abbey for one night. And so the servants are like, oh, we get to cook for the king and the queen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The king and the queen, they send their servants in to do it. And then the servants can't serve. And so they plot to have this to make this happen. We're going to serve them. And that's basically the conceit of the movie. And it's as thin as it sounds. But there's pretty dresses. There's nice things to
look
at.
You know how I like pretty dresses.
Yes. There's nice things to look at. The mood itself is very genial. And I can see how people get into this show. I don't think it's going to provoke me to seek this out, especially from the very beginning. But it's good.
All right.
I did not see this movie. I think I've seen one episode of Downton Abbey, but after having watched The Gentleman, where Michelle Dockery is in that, who plays was it Lady Mary Talbot?
Mary. Brunette.
Yeah, plays Lady Mary Crawley in the. I guess she got married in the series, but anyway, yeah, she plays Mary.
She's the heir apparent to Maggie Smith.
Fucking phenomenal in The Gentleman.
Is she really?
Yeah, and so I'm now wanting to find all the Michelle Dockery things that I can find.
Well, she's good in this. She's got a line. she's got a line in this where her bed servant is like stripping off her pantyhose and shit like that. And Mary's just the character's like, why does it have to be such a struggle? And she's talking about keeping Downton Abbey up and running and shit like that.
Right.
I'm like, this is the goddamn whitest thing anyone has ever fucking said. The fucking bed servant is taking her socks off right now. What does it have to be such a struggle?
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck off. Anyway, yeah, but the movie itself is good.
My wife also really likes another show. I think some of the same people behind the scenes. It's Call the Midwife? Or I think it's called Call the Midwife.
Mm.
It's been running for several seasons, and it's set in like early England, which shows the life of a midwife, which from what I can tell, it doesn't seem to be a very good life.
All right, all right.
But if you like Downton Abbey, maybe check that out.
All right.
Yep. I got a hard-ass warn for you.
Nice.
Yay.
Like in the low 20s on Rotten Tomatoes warn.
And yet you watched it.
I'll say it again. This is how I operate when I'm flipping through the TV guide. If I see a recent-ish movie that I don't recognize the title of, but it has actors in it I know, I will stop and start watching. And if it is almost, there's almost nothing that will make me stop watching it at that point. If it's really bad, I'm going to want to talk about it here. If it's really good, I've just found something awesome. So the movie's called Reclaim.
Okay.
And it was made 3 years ago, 2015, stars your boy Ryan Phillippe and John Cusack.
Hold on. I think I saw the poster for this somewhere. Is there a third star in there, like a third cameo of a named actor?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was going to wait to get to that before I told you who it was. So Ryan Phillippe and his wife, I recognize her face. I Googled her. She's been in stuff I've seen. I can't quite remember her name or what
I've
seen.
Rachel Lefevre.
Rachel Lefevre, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen her in
She's in stuff. Twilight movies.
Yes, yes. She's the redhead vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
So she and Ryan Phillippe are married, and they've come to Puerto Rico to adopt a baby.
Oh, okay.
And they met with the adoption lady, and the adoption lady gives them the child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what the fuck the kid's name is. And says, we just have to wait until Monday for her passport and visa and stuff to come through. And then you guys can pick it up and go back to America.
Ah,
so they go to the beach.
Sense of where this is going.
and they're frolicking on the beach. And mom is helping the girl make sandcastles. And dad's out doing somersaults trying to make the little girl laugh. And then over here is John Cusack, a really hot girl, and some thug-looking guy. Now, they might all well have been wearing shirts that say, we're the bad guys. Because the way they're acting, and it's like conspicuous. There's nobody on this beach but white people in Puerto Rico. And they kind of like talk and have like a little chit-chat yada, and that's all it for now. Then they go back, and that night he has a fight with his wife, Ryan Phillippe does, so he goes out to the bar to get a drink. But he's an alcoholic.
Oh,
and he runs into John Cusack there.
Huh.
who gets him drunk.
Oh.
And then sends him, well, he ends up getting in a fight and ends up in the hospital. No, he gets arrested. He gets arrested for getting in a fight at a bar.
Oh.
And his wife comes to get him. She's like, is this where we are at again? Did you fall off the wagon again? You told me you were. And he's like, no, I was only going to have fun drinking and then drive the and then whatnot, yada, yada. They get back to the hotel. The girl is missing the next morning.
What?
Missing. Their door was locked.
Their daughter, their adopted daughter,
poof, gone.
Okay.
They go to the police. Surprise, Luis Guzman is the police chief. And this is where I thought, this is going to veer hard into comedy, and it's not. It's really not. And he says this is a known scam. He gives the name for the scam, and you know they take your money, and they never give you back your passports, and let us handle this. We're going to look into this. Well, Ryan Phillippe can't let well enough alone, so he goes back to the adoption offices, breaks in, and finds them empty. It's like in the game when Michael Douglas takes the cops back to the game company's headquarters, all gone.
Yeah.
Or even the Spanish Prisoner when he takes the cops back to Steve Martin's
place.
Or
Escape Room.
Yeah. and so then Luis Guzman gets really mad because he's like, we had a break-in at that office and I know it was you and I told you not to do anything. And then John Cusack shows back up and kidnaps both the adults and starts asking for more money. He's got a laptop and he's like, I know you guys have money. And they're like, we don't have any money. And he says, you were in a car accident 6 months ago and you lost your baby. And I know you got a settlement from this company, yada, yada. Let's have that bank account number. And so basically they set up a wire transfer and Phillippe has to go into the bank the next morning to get the money. And Cusack's going to keep his wife until he does. And it all goes sideways in the least interesting way possible.
Nice.
And
you're selling this pretty well, actually.
I would say stay away from this movie. It's not well acted. It's one of those Cusack performances where you can tell he's just kind of making a house payment.
Yep.
And, you know, Phillippe is Phillippe. And Luis Guzman is just happy to be invited to play a serious role. He grabs the money and then ditches the dude, the bad guy, the thug that took him to the bank.
Uh-huh.
And then it becomes this race. Can he get back to his wife to save her before Cusack kills her? And they get back there. And the wife is missing because she freed herself. And
what happened to the girl?
The little girl? They get to go home to America with her at the end.
Oh, so even though the adoption agency is fake.
Yeah, the cops just give her the little, kid to
them.
They
do a face-off thing. And
it really is very face-off-y because Guzman shows up at the end. There's one bad guy left. That person gets killed. And then it's Phillippe and the little girl and his wife. And they're walking away. And then roll credits. We pan up with a crane shot. And I guess they're just going to take that little girl. I don't know where the little girl originated, but it does suggest that the little girl is in on it.
Uh-huh.
That she, even though she's six or whatever, that she's done this, played this role several times, and they've done this con several times, but now she's going to go live with the Phillippes.
Is it possible that John Cusack is like another Nicolas Cage at this point?
Yes.
Because I'm looking at his movies that he's made in the last 20 years.
Yes.
And they are a lot of straight to video type of things. And then the big ones that he is in, you're like, huh?
Did you see The Bagman?
No.
That's a shitty straight to video.
I think I did run across it on this list, but some of the big ones that I recognize, like Lee Daniels, the butler, he plays Richard Nixon. I mean,
oh, I remember that. Yeah,
I don't even. I mean, I never saw that movie. And what was it? He was in Chirac.
Oh my God, he plays the father, the white guy on the south side of Chicago in that movie.
Yeah, Father Mike Corridon.
Yeah, and he's based on a real person, like a guy that's literally doing the Lord's work down there in Chicago. It's that movie blows ass.
I was looking at these titles like Never Grow Old, River Runs Red, Distorted, Singularity, Blood Money,
he'll take a paycheck.
Arsenal, Cell, Dragon Blade.
I remember Cell.
Reclaim, Love and Mercy, The Prince, Drive Hard.
I've seen
fake.
Drive Hard.
You have?
Well, that yeah, because fake. Drive Hard came out around the same time that Drive Angry came out with Nicolas Cage.
I mean, yeah, here's the Bagman, Maps to the Stars, Adult World, Grand Piano, The Frozen Ground. I mean, come on, man.
The Frozen Ground is one of those definite direct-to-video. I think it has, like, Ice Cube in it or something like that. Or maybe I'm just making the ice frozen.
Like, it's just half of it. Like, that's all the way to 2014. You go all the way to 2000, and you're like, oh, 2012. That's something I saw. Well, okay. So, what did you think? What's going on with the bracket? Give us your hate mail, whatever.
Frozen Ground has Nicolas Cage.
It does?
That's perfect.
I am watching that shit.
It is. So they were in together with Con Air, and then that one.
And it's 50 Cent that's in this, not 50 Cent, not Ice Cube. Vanessa Hudgens is in this.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that's like one of those things where you do the thesis, like the guy does in PCU, where he's looking for anytime at any moment on cable, there's either a Gene Hackman or Michael Caine movie on. Like, you know, if you do one that's like either John Cusack or Nicolas Cage, and then you run across Frozen Ground,
World's Collide.
You're like Nicolas Cage and John Cusack in the same movie. That's my thesis. I can stop watching TV. All right. What did you think about all the stuff? Go to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. Also, we are on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on Discord. If you want to go to Discord, you can go to the Facebook page and private message me, and I'll give you a link. Or you can go to the Reddit page, and there is a link on the right side. We're also on SoundCloud. But that's going to do it for this week. We'll continue the brackets next week.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. We'll have a whole bracket.
Yes, we will.
That'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Barrett Sherrill. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
They're going to film original cast on the stage, right?
They have already done it. They filmed it in 2016 before any of them left.
Before any of the principal original cast left,
they already filmed. Oh, so they're not bringing the band back together. They're using existing footage.
They set up multiple cameras and an empty Richard Rodgers and filmed a performance. They probably even did it for more than one just to make sure they had coverage.
There's also supplemental stuff that they're shooting, too, that I guess makes it where it's not just the stage show.
Maybe. I would go just for the stage show.
Well, so there's not going to be an audience?
I don't think so. Okay. I guess he's cranky about the audience.
Yeah.
Kind of being a little bitch, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. I think I'm voting Bernie just because the other day he said day one he'll executive order legalizing weed. Actually decriminalizing. And ending the war on drugs, which are both far more important than just my own weed habits.
No, I mean, that's like a real world thing. Whenever you see all these like puff pieces on the news about like, oh, pot is legal now. Everybody's out there smoking the ganj. And somebody has to remind them, like, there's a million African-American dude sitting in jail for like small amounts of this.
That's the trouble I have. That's why I liked when Illinois decriminalized just a few months ago, they also like
commuted all the sentences
for anybody that had been arrested for that. That's it needs to go hand in hand.
Yep.
And it's frustrating to see lots of celebrities like already making millions on legal weed.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to see. We need to get all on the same page, goddammit.
I agree.
And why it's going to happen is that fucking opioid crisis. Because weed is the best way to treat half the shit they use to prescribe opioids for. So that's my scientific medical opinion.
I don't know.
I went to 8 years of something. I'm just saying that I think that's where some people who have been against decriminalizing weed may come around, is that the opioid thing.
I like how you give them a mind of their own. Like, they have a choice whether they want to come out or not.
There's this weird...
Like a groundhog.
There's this weird kind of like group sex scene in this where, I swear to God, she's fully clothed, and then all of a sudden she takes her boobs out, and then she covers them back up again.
Yeah.
They have a mind of their own.
That's what you do. As you do.
That's what you do.
I'm sorry.
Barrett has swallowed a cotton ball.
All right, I'm good. Yes, he has.